like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stages Podcast.
Binge close to 100 episodes.
Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with the season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast.
Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Shireen. How are you? How the hell are you?
How the hell are you? I'm actually doing good. I liked our episode today. We invited Trisha and Becca on, and we had like a round table of sorts talking about, we're recording this on May 5th. So the leak of the Supreme Court draft came out a few days ago. So we had a round table about abortion and our experiences. And I thought it was really great. What did you think?
I thought it was great. Becca, Trisha, how the hell are you?
Great.
We're doing good. Excited to be here.
Yay.
All right.
See? Well, stay tuned for the next part.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hello, everyone. My name is Shireen.
Hello, Shireen. My name is Anna.
We're joined by Becca and Trisha today. Anna had a great idea of doing like a round table of sorts because today is May the 5th, and a couple days ago, the Supreme Court document leaked about the draft to overturn Roe v. Wade. So we're going to talk about that today and get into some history, give you so many resources to go to. So please listen to the whole thing because we have a lot of good info and we'll definitely put stuff in the notes as well.
Yes.
But yeah, what a shit show.
What a shit show.
To say the least.
This week has been so overwhelming in the sense that I'm so tired of it feels like we're in this constant time loop of us making some progress and then Republicans and conservatives being like, no women allowed. And you're like, what, dude? We've been here for so long. Like, stop doing this. Get over it. You don't care about a baby. But here's the thing. The biggest problem with all of this is like, they care so much about this baby being born, right? But the second this baby's born,
no,
you
cares.
Are a nuisance. You don't get anything. You, oh God, all you want is social services, you stupid piece of fucking shit baby. And it's like, why are you forcing people to have the babies that you don't actually want to support?
Yeah.
Right.
And if you like the whole like contradiction of being pro-life and then pro the mom not having a life, or like pro the baby somehow like medically interfere, you know what I mean? Like, it's that you're not actually pro-life if you're encouraging situations that could be potentially dangerous as well. But what I have realized is I mean, I don't entirely blame Republicans, to be honest. I think Democrats, especially, I mean, even Biden, everyone always runs on this promise to, like, codify Roe v. Wade. Biden did the same thing. Obviously, that did not happen. So I think, like, these crises are so urgent in their campaigns, and when they get elected, it's like nothing happened. It's like we have amnesia, and like we're back in that time loop. So it's like, I just think both parties utilize abortion and like a lot of stuff in particular, but like right now it's abortion, a couple years ago it was gay marriage, but they utilize those things to like mobilize their supporters because it's so polarizing, and the right usually has basis in this like Catholic Christian bullshit that people really rally with because it's like my faith, blah blah blah.
I mean, it's the constant battle of like, what is the point of saying in the Constitution there's a separation of church and state when it's so clear that all of these different politicians on both the left and the right, because Biden has a history of not supporting Roe v. Wade and women's right to choose and things like that. He is a Catholic man, you know?
He cited that as his weakness back in the day when he was like criticized for it. He was like, I mean, paraphrasing, but it was something along the lines of like, my weakness is that I'm a good Catholic man. Or something, because he voted to overturn it
exactly
in the 80s, the early 80s. So it's like,
right,
exactly. So it's like, what is the point in saying this is a separation of church and state when it's so clear that all of these very polarizing issues are so rooted in people's misjudgment of their own faith, you know?
And yeah,
may get a lot of flame for that. But as someone who grew up in the South and someone who grew up in the Catholic Church, I'm not here for it. I'm sorry. I am so tired of other people making decisions about my body and what I want or don't want to do with it. And this, that, and the third, you know? It's like, it's so disheartening to see this come back as like, this is such a fundamental right for women. And yet we are having it be decided on by a bunch of men and a white woman who like would literally throw herself under the bus to be a pick me. Like, I don't get it. Like, it's so convenient for you to say that you are pro-life when this is no longer a problem for you. You know, I don't know if you've hit menopause or what, but like, you're not rearing any new children. You have a stable life, a stable home, a husband who is going to afford you the ability to bear children with in a stable support system. And that is not the case for most people dealing with the pro-abortion, pro-choice decision they have to make for themselves in their daily lives.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Also, I just want to get the quote right. His quote was, I'm probably a victim or a product, however you want to phrase it, of my background.
I love a white man claiming a victim.
A victim of my background.
That's absurd. Sorry, I just had to really
No, that was great.
Highlight that.
Yeah, I was just saying that, like, just exactly what Becca said, of if you are so against abortion because of religion, then you can just not get one.
Yeah.
But it's like forcing other people to believe in your religion when you live in a country with religious freedom. You know, it's like your own personal choice. And if you're so against it, just don't do it.
Like, same with homosexuality or like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not your life. How does this affect you at all?
I mean, that's the thing. It's like anyone who it affects is someone they don't want to deal with to begin with. So it's like, well, then why don't you just let them abort a baby that will only make their lives harder, thus coming to you asking for more social services that you already refused to give in the first place and don't want to give more of?
Yeah.
It's like, wow, sounds like it could be an easy solution for everybody for you to respect a woman or, you know, trans man or any sort of person who is able to give births. Just make it easier for everyone, including yourself. So we're not literally hunting you down and putting your head on a stake for not respecting us as human beings. What I'm saying, sorry, hashtag more vigilante justice. Okay, go ahead.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Because obviously the other option of like voting blue, we did that, didn't work, you idiot. Like,
let me tell you how I have been responding to these texts and emails asking for money.
Oh,
I have been flaming them. I have been like, oh, you want your little money? Fuck you.
I thought you were going to say, like, kind of like during the Black Lives Matter stuff, I thought you were going to say, like, people were texting me being like, I'm so sorry that your rights are being taken away.
Because,
you
know,
there was like that conversation happening in 2020 where people were like, I'm so sorry people are shooting you in the street. And it's like, wow, I didn't need that text. Thank you. This is just my daily life.
I mean, I'm sure if you have social media, you've seen a bunch of arguments or like viral little things. One of them is about how banning abortions abortions just mean, like, abortion will still happen. There won't be any safe abortions. But my argument against that is, like, they don't care. You know what I mean? They don't care that there's going to be more deaths. It's not them. It's a class that they, like, don't really care about at all. So, and the most people that are going to be affected are those without the resources or the privileges to get abortions, because the rich will always have abortion as an option. You know what I mean? So it's like, that argument is fine. Like, banning abortion means there's no safe abortions. I understand that, but I think we have to really believe that they don't care even about that, obviously, because they still did it.
Yeah, it's about building systemic harm, right? Like, right. I really look at this issue the way that I feel like Black and brown people in this country have had generational trauma with slavery and all those things. Like, it's like, this is an issue that is so inherently built to create generational and systemic harm and trauma to those Black and brown women, you know, and anyone, Black and brown people with uteruses, you know, that are dealing with these issues. Like, it's just purposely built to control us and to hurt us, because they, like, you're right, Shireen, like, they will never care that our bodies are the ones dying.
And I mean, like, the thing is, it's operating as it should, like what you're saying. And that's the most heartbreaking part, is like, we're fighting against a machine that's literally just doing what it's built to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's just so sad that, you know, if you have an abortion after Roe v. Wade is overturned, there's such a high chance that it will be unsafe, that it might hurt you physically. And then on top of that, you could be penalized legally. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just two things in a row that are both just so difficult to suffer through. And yeah, I think having an abortion is enough of a difficult experience for a lot of people to be pursued by the government because of it. Just makes it 100 times worse.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, in Alito's opinion, he wrote that rights like abortion have to be deeply rooted in the nation and the tradition. Just like you were saying, Becca, like, so many terrible things are deeply rooted in the nation and the tradition, such as slavery, such as racism, such as sexism. So how could you think that that needs to be a justification for such a basic right?
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. Sorry, I just saw Larry David this week. it is truly, in my opinion, one of the stupidest debates we're having in this country right now. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's so nonsensical to me that this is still, to this day, an issue. It makes me think there's no such thing as progress. And it also makes me think, like, the like, the big D Democrats, none of this matters, you know? Like, none, you guys aren't anything to me anymore. Like, you're going to tell me to vote? Honey, I have voted in every goddamn election my entire life that I was able to vote, honey. Okay?
Yeah, right.
Look at us now.
And I'm still cannot believe we're like, it's like, yeah, sure, I'll vote. Maybe. Now I'm kind of like, I don't know anymore, to be honest with you. Now, now more than ever, I'm like, no.
Well, I'm not gonna vote.
Because now I'm just pissed.
Yeah. Maybe this is too pessimistic, but I don't think Democrats actually want to codify it, because both parties use it for fundraising. It's like a huge motivator to get people to the polls, to be like, because even if you're not a Democrat, if it's on the line when you're voting for a president, you're going to go vote. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's used by both parties for their own benefit. I do want to highlight some stuff that really blew my mind. Because after this leak happened, a lot of states are putting things into law already.
Yeah.
And some of them are so abhorrent. Oklahoma, for example, they just passed the most restrictive abortion ban in America, which punishes people with up to 10 years in prison or a fine of $100,000 if you get an abortion. Meanwhile, rapists in Oklahoma get up to 5 years.
Holy shit.
So basically, like, a woman or a doctor that has anything to do with abortions will get criminalized. Like, they are criminals more than rapists.
Yeah.
It's just disgusting. And then in Tennessee, I could not believe this one. In Tennessee, a rapist's family or friends, they're allowed to sue a victim of rape if they got an abortion.
Oh, fuck out of here.
And it's like, okay, well, so you were going to adopt this child? Were you? Because it's like, I don't want to fucking disgust do it.
And incest is included in that. Incest is included in that justification.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's a really devastating thing. Like, the trans laws or the anti-trans laws, like, all this stuff where it's like, it is illegal for you to exist. And that is batshit at this point in our lives, as if we haven't gone through enough in this country and come such a long way, that like the fact that someone would want to exist in the body that they want to exist in, or just like not have a baby because they're unable to support the baby, or just not in the right place to have the baby, or just like, hey, fucking don't want a baby, period, doesn't have a reason, just like, I don't want to fuck with this little thing, that's fine. It's like, it's so none of our business, any of it. But then the second you give these conservative states an inch, they take a mile. Now these fools are out here being like, gay marriage is illegal, being gay is illegal. And it's like, what are you talking about? Literally, what are you talking about?
Interracial marriage is being talked about too. And I'm like, okay, I feel like we're so
We're in apartheid now?
Yeah.
What?
That's terrifying.
Well, there was one wild tweet that was very misguided. I forgot who it was, but it was basically like, I wonder how these white supremacist lawmakers would feel if a black man impregnated their white daughter. And I'm like, that is not the angle.
I saw her apology like, my bad. That was clearly a fucked up tweet.
It's that like, was a white woman thing to say.
And it's like, so when did you last watch Get Out? Or
You know you're in Get Out right now, right? But you're not the person trying to get out. Okay, actually, speaking of white women, Becca. God, I'm turning into my mother. Wow, that was like such a thing, because my mom never knows any of our names. And I apologize. This is sad. Becca, you were talking a lot about kind of how, and this is off air, some research you've done about how a lot of like birth control testing was done on women of color, Puerto Rican women. I know you wanted to kind of touch on that if you want to talk about what you learned in your research.
So basically, this is something I had kind of learned. I don't even remember how it like came into my consciousness, because it's not something they talk about in history class. It's not something they talk about really anywhere, but Puerto Rican women are the reason that we have modern day birth control, because they were illegally tested on in the 50s and 60s, and also just majorly forced into sterilization between 1930 something and like 1980 because of what was considered overpopulation in the island and it being poor because of colonization. You know, that's just like the most high level way to put it. But it's just ironic that the way white women in general refuse to acknowledge the privileges they have through having modern day birth control comes at the slaying of black and brown bodies. And like three different women died during the testing of modern day birth control. And they didn't have autopsies or anything because they didn't want to contribute that to the studies. But it was like very clear that the birth control was the reason for their death, because the hormonal balances and the birth controls they were testing on these women in Puerto Rico is much higher than modern day birth control. But it was all a part of like a eugenics ploy from Procter and Gamble and Margaret Sanger, who are, you know, of course, the reasons we have modern day birth control and like, woo, feminism, but like very much white feminism, because they were like, well, we need to get rid of these poor black and brown people in Puerto Rico and the United States at large. So like, we need to force sterilization in their populations and then make it a bodily autonomous choice for women who deserve to make that choice for themselves.
It's disgusting. It's like eugenics. It's like, who are you to play God?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I wanted to point out specifically, I had like done research. There's like a really good article from history.com called "The First Birth Control Pill Used Puerto Rican Women as Guinea Pigs" that said Sanger thought non-white people should be prevented from procreating, but they agree that Sanger supported eugenics, a theory that undesirable populations could be reduced or eliminated by controlling their breeding, which is a gross way to put it, but also that this JSTOR.org research article from the 80s about the Puerto Rican sterilization movement mentioned that from 1950 to 1970, Puerto Rico had the highest rate of contraceptive sterilization in the world.
Wow.
So, and that was through coerced, forced sterilization. And then like the last thing I really wanted to highlight from this website called Liberal Currents, they had really talked about like kind of the history of how these Puerto Rican women were manipulated by healthcare workers into believing they had access to safe and reversible birth control. Like that was the narrative they were being spewed by these doctors who wanted to do the testing on them, that this was going to be reversible. And a lot of times it wasn't. And especially women that would go to give birth in the 60s and 50s in hospitals, if they were like healthy and able, they would not let them give birth unless they agreed to a forced sterilization. And they did not know it was going to be irreversible, like getting their tubes tied was going to be irreversible. So they could not like deliver their healthy child without being told that they couldn't have any more children. And that really hit home for me, because growing up, it was always told to me that my abuela, she was in Puerto Rico in the 60s. And had her three children, my mother and her brother and her younger sister, all kind of back to back. And the story was always kind of like, oh, you know, like your abuela looked at your grandfather and like she could get pregnant. And then it was like, oh, she wanted to get her tubes tied after the third one because she just like felt like she couldn't handle any more kids. But after reading all this stuff, I was kind of like, I wonder if like, you know how families kind of change stories, you know, to heal themselves from that trauma. And yeah. I always now reading that was like very curious if that is kind of a familial choice that my family made to kind of change the narrative of that story to feel better, because I'm sure my abuela, you know, she did not have a college degree. She barely graduated high school in New York, and then she married a Puerto Rican man and moved back to Puerto Rico. I'm sure she had no idea at that time. She was probably what, in her late 20s? Because I think she had my mom at, I don't know, like 20-something. So yeah, she was probably in her 20s and was told like, yeah, like this will be easy. Like you can, like when you're ready to have kids again, and then like never, ever again. Jeez. And also she had to like have her husband sign off on, like it's also a weird patriarchal thing, because it's like at that time too, she did not have enough bodily autonomy to make this decision on her own either. It's like, oh, you and your husband have to sign off, and your husband has to really sign off on it. If like you have to get your tubes tied because like we don't want you to have any more kids, but your husband also has to sign on it because like you aren't allowed to have bodily autonomy because you're a woman married to a man. So it's just so crazy. It's like we're fighting for our right to be able to have bodily autonomy, period. But yeah. It's so sad to think that like so many women did not have a choice. They chose to do these treatments because they thought it would be reversible, that they were having bodily autonomy. They were so desperate because financially they were not in a place to have these kids. But it's like at the cost that they didn't know their livelihood was on the line. They didn't know what these side effects were. There was no full disclosure about the side effects of these medications. And frankly, the doctors didn't know either. To this day, many doctors don't really like believe or rightfully test for certain side effects because they just don't simply care about women's bodies. So it is something to think about, that when you are thinking about your right period today, you know, is standing on tops of many Black and brown women that were, you know, abused in the process.
Yeah, I think that definitely gets forgotten about. Thank you for that. This is a good time to take our first break. Let's do that, and we'll be right back.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season remind us to embrace change and fearlessly look toward the future. Like Andrew Jarecki, award-winning filmmaker and creator of Movie Phone.
The studios didn't really control the theaters didn't control the studios. And I thought, well, there's a window in here where I could make things easier for the consumer and also make something that would be very useful for the industry.
Or Kellen Kenny, Chief Marketing and Growth Officer at AT&T, who installed fiber in customers' houses rather than leading from afar.
It is so crucial that you spend time with the customers. That is the best lesson.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
from iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
And we're back. Having a great time in this country right now. Trisha, you did a lot of research for Daily Zeitgeist about different organizations that are kind of helping with the abortion situation, because, I mean, it's unfortunate, but we're getting to that point where it's like, it's on us to help people who live in states that they can't legally get an abortion or spend the rest of their life in jail be able to find a way to have a safe abortion. So do you want to kind of touch a little on the organizations that you found?
Yeah, of course. Okay, so after Roe v. Wade is going to unfortunately be overturned, there's around 26 states that people are predicting where abortion will be basically criminalized and illegal. So there's several abortion funds and networks of just people on the ground trying to raise enough money to help people either travel out of state and get an abortion or just care for their situation however they can. And there are some kind of big national nonprofits, but if you are going to donate, I would probably recommend donating to these funds because the money just goes more directly to people who need it. So yeah, those states, well, some of those states include, I'll just list them off, Missouri, Florida, Texas, Mississippi, Utah, Louisiana, Georgia, Kentucky, Arkansas. So a lot of the southern states is where this is going to be felt the most strongly. And I think we'll link off to either a Google Doc or a list of resources where you can donate if you need. But if you can't donate, there's also other ways that you can help. There are a lot of protests, which hopefully doesn't cost much to go to. You just show up and voice your support. I think protests are being organized across the country. And there's also a lot of organizations that are amplifying the voices of people who have had abortions. There's We Testify and Shout Your Abortion. Both are amazing websites, and you can also follow their Twitters where they just tell abortion stories from people who want to share them, to just show the complexity of this experience that in the modern polemic is just so black or white. It's like, yeah. So, and yeah, just there are a few national organizations as well. And again, if you're going to donate, I would recommend donating to an organization that's run by people of color who are taking charge of helping their own communities in this time that's just really perilous. One of them is Sister Song, and I'm just going to read it out here. It was formed in 1997 by 16 organizations of women of color from four mini communities, Native American, African American, Latina, and Asian American. We recognize that we have the right and responsibility to represent ourselves and our communities. And so if you're not sure which state's fund you want to donate to, that would be a really good one to support. And then the final thing I wanted to talk about is there is now abortion by mail. So you can order pills and have an abortion at home. It's a series of, I believe it's five pills total. The first one and terminates the pregnancy, and then you take four more, and that is kind of like a period. You just bleed, and then all the pregnancy tissue exits from your body. And the FDA actually released a statement. I think this was back in December, so it was a few months ago, but that it'll permanently allow abortion pills by mail. So that's also, there's a few websites where you can read more about that and potentially donate. There's AJANE, Plan C, and Abortion on Demand. And several of them can only legally distribute pills to a few states right now, but they're working on expanding access, especially in light of the possibility of Roe v. Wade being overturned. But that's like a very safe way to end a pregnancy. And you also don't have to deal with the extremely long waiting times that it sometimes takes to go to Planned Parenthood or another in-person clinic. You don't have to deal with the people who are just, you know, have no compassion and are protesting outside abortion clinics and like yelling at you as you're trying to make a pretty tough decision. And yeah, so I'm hoping that will become more common and that these activist networks will help distribute them to women who can't travel a lot. For example, if you're in Texas and you need to travel to, let's say, New York for an abortion, that's really tough. You might have to take a few days off your job, and that might cause you to lose your job and not be there for your other kids if you have them, or your family, or, you know, whoever's relying on you. So, yeah, so these are organizations that are all working towards making women and anyone else who needs an abortion safe and still accessing abortion. And I mean, the last thing to remember is that it's still legal until it's actually overturned. And so if you do get an abortion, even in those states, you are fully protected by the law until it's officially overturned.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point of like abortion through pills. Like, yes, you know, like in certain states, it will be kind of a legal mess to get through, but it is a safe option to have an abortion at home instead of going to have it done at a hospital, Planned Parenthood, just anywhere. So you can get those pills from a clinical provider. Obviously, the price will vary based on insurance and lack of insurance. It's kind of up in the air. I honestly can't say exactly how much it will cost, but it's worth, I think, looking into as an alternative. Nothing is over the counter as of now, but apparently you can buy these pills in Mexico over the counter, as you can do in most pharmacies in Mexico. I mean, look, everything is at, you must do your own research, okay? So don't just take my word and drive to Mexico, okay? Just really look into this stuff before you get into any of it. But yeah, there's options. So you don't feel like it's not doable, that you have to, you know, I mean, a lot of the fear here is like, because legal abortion is not an option, that people will, you know, turn to less safe options and or potentially harm themselves. And it's not worth it, because I know it feels like there's no way out. There is. You know, you just unfortunately have to really.
Yeah.
It's the unfortunate part of living in America is that like a lot of survival is based off mutual aid.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and I just wanted to add that for those abortion pill mailing services, they are very sensitive to people who can't afford it. So, for example, an abortion at Planned Parenthood in the state of New York costs over $500, I believe.
Oh, my God.
Whereas, I had a medication abortion, so this is kind of why I know all these details. It costs like over $500 to go to Planned Parenthood, and you also have to wait several weeks, like maybe 3 to 4 weeks. And that's a really difficult decision if you are pregnant and potentially feeling very sick, like you have morning sickness and you can't go to work and you can't maybe have normal sex with your partner because your body is just changing so much.
Yeah.
And you need to hide it. And so what you really need is to have help as soon as possible.
Also, the longer you wait, the further along you are, yeah, and the harder it is to have that abortion.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And it's extremely expensive. And for people who are still on their parents' abortion, which is maybe a lot of younger women or...
Parents' health care?
Yeah, sorry. Parents' health care, parents' insurance. They don't really have the option of privacy in a lot of these institutions. So if you choose to have a medication abortion, you can pay, or I think you can get it for free if you need to. There's like a sliding scale. Mm-hmm. So it's anywhere from free to a few hundred dollars. And those organizations really rely on the support of mutual aid funds. So it's especially important to donate.
Yeah.
To those mutual aid funds.
And a few of those I found online is Aid Access, Plan C, Women on Web, Women Help Women. So a lot of these organizations will help you access pills online for abortions and help kind of guide you through that. So, yeah, I had a friend have an abortion over the pill with the pill. And it's interesting that we don't think about it as often as like an option. But I think we need to be a little bit more like, it's not, you know, the end all.
It doesn't have to be that scary.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's like, I think it's so sad, this narrative we've built through Hollywood, through whatever have you, you know, the
Christian coat hanger concept.
Yeah, or that it's like is this big medical procedure that you go in and then it's sterile and it, you know, everyone saw, I guess I shouldn't say everyone saw Juno. I saw Juno, you know, like it was, you go in and, you know, Elliot's terrified and looking and, you know, is looking at those condoms, the color candy condoms, and the room is quiet and it smells funky and they run out of there and it's a mess, right? Like that's how I always viewed an abortion clinic. And it, in reality, if it's early enough, it can be as simple as taking, you know, like a plan B type of situation. You know, it doesn't have to be this intense emotional, like, thing, you know. It's like, of course, if you're further down the line, there's more things at risk and bodily functions and all that stuff, but it should be normalized that, like, once you find out at like 6 weeks, you're like, yeah, I don't feel like this. Whether it doesn't have to be this, which I also hate, it's this narrative of like, you have to be in dire straits to get an abortion. Like you have to not be able to afford having a child and all that stuff. Yeah. Like,
no, it's like, it could just be like, fuck that.
I'm just not in the mood to be with child for the next 20,000 years of my life, you know? Like, it's like, it's much easier for me to make a decision to say, nah, yeet, than it is for me to decide to keep it and then take it on for the next lifetime.
Like, I like our style of not interested, like, no thanks, baby.
I mean, what's disturbing is that these states that are taking these measures, like Texas, for example, they're going to make it illegal to have an abortion after 6 weeks. But you don't even, a lot of women don't even know they're pregnant at 6 weeks.
No.
So it's like, it's just, they're not even, they don't even have an option. They're not even giving them a chance. You know what I mean? It's so, and I have a feeling that this draft, this, that got leaked, I have a feeling that like, the Democratic Party is going to compromise on something, like it's illegal after this, or you know what I mean? There's going to be some catch, and so if it does end up not getting overturned, and then there's something else happening or something like that. But I mean, like I'll admit that like I don't know, I didn't know a lot about the pills, to be honest. I have had friends that have done crazy things that really disturbed me, and I know. From, again, Hollywood and everything else, there's so many movies that are, like, actually moving about this subject. And to the point where, like, this is a very short tangent, but I had to get an ultrasound in my uterus, torso, or, like, abdomen area for some reason. Like, not for any kind of pregnancy reason, but, like, for, like, a cyst thing. And this was, like, when I was 23. And I remember being on the table and like looking at the screen and somehow feeling the feeling in the Hollywood films, just being like, oh, like, should I be looking at this with yeah. I don't know, happiness? And I just, like, realized just how ingrained or subconsciously ingrained these things are in us.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I've never wanted kids. I've never, you know what I mean? And we yeah. talked about this before we jumped on, but there's also the restrictions that doctors put on their patients when they are trying to claim something, like tying their tubes, for example. Like, this is before the pandemic, so I was younger, but my doctor didn't let me tie my tubes because I haven't had a child yet. So as if that's the whole point. That's why I don't, you know what I mean? So I just feel like there's all these catches that get so, I don't know.
It's like, which is it, right? Like, yeah. it's like you are pro-life, but it's like, okay, well then I would like to choose when I want yes. to procreate life. So let me choose my birth control, or, you know, don't make healthcare access so difficult, or, you know, teach men that, you know, or people with penises that condoms are important and a part of safe sex. Like, they don't teach that in a lot of those southern states. I was from one of those southern states. I never learned about safe sex, like, not from my parents, not from my school, like, not from the movies I watch. It took me an embarrassing long time and getting an STI to honestly have an honest conversation with myself about what is my sexual health. Like, I always, you know, protected myself in terms of birth control, but holistic sexual health, I did not, you know, I was like, condoms are scary. And it's like, no, they're necessary. Yeah. And things like that. Like, it's like, you're not making it a choice for anybody to choose to have children in a safe way.
Yeah. No. You're just like, yeah, it's like a power play, essentially, yeah. you yeah. know? One of the films that I was thinking of when I was mentioning how it can be so moving, but one of them is really, really good. It's called Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. It's like an indie film.
I've been wanting to see that.
It's from 2020, and it's basically mm-hmm. these teenage girls that, like, one of them has an unwanted pregnancy, and so they travel state lines to get to New York to help the girl, and it's just, it's very real, and it's shot in this really beautiful way, but there are so many movies like that that are just, it's, I don't know, it's just really upsetting how many people will suffer and struggle because of this if it does get overturned, and it just, I don't know, breaks my heart.
Yeah, and also, like, because it's ethically ambiguous, what Becca was saying just reminded me of how, like, these things are so stigmatized among immigrant communities. Like, you don't talk to your parents about anything mm-mm. sex-related. So then if you do get pregnant, it's like, not only do you have institutional, like, you don't have institutional support from the government or anyone besides, like, these people who are really trying to do something, but nor can you tell the people who are closest to you, including your family.
It's so isolating.
And even your friends, because it's just so hammered into our heads that, like, this is something to be ashamed of. This is something to mm-hmm. be ashamed of.
I literally, growing up, I had to have a heart-to-heart with my mom a few years ago because I was like, this really fucked me up. I remember when I, like, hit puberty, I didn't have a sex talk. My dad was just like, don't end up like your aunt Purita.
I still haven't had a sex talk. Not really. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because my aunt got pregnant when she was in high school multiple times. I think she had 3 pregnancies in high wow. school. And that's all I knew. And I was very awkward. No man, no boy was talking to me at 14. And I remember, because I knew so little about sex, and my mom told me, if I got pregnant, don't come home. That is what she told me when I was, at the same time that my dad said, don't get pregnant, don't be like your aunt Purita. My mom told me, if you get pregnant, don't come home. And I remember being with, like, one of my high school boyfriends, and we didn't even have sex. Like, you know, we did other things, but we didn't have sex because I fundamentally did not understand what those other things were and, like, what actually makes a baby, because they don't tell you that in any of your classes. Yeah. They don't tell you, like, sperm, egg, baby, you know? They don't tell you, like, that jizz has to come in you to make baby. And so I did not understand that. And so there'd be times where, like, I hadn't even had sex and I was so afraid that I was pregnant that I would just punch my stomach because I was like, oh, like, I can't get an abortion. That literally couldn't cross my mind. Like, which is sad because, like, A, I wasn't even having sex. Like, I was nowhere near pregnant, but I was so afraid. The shame was, like, so emulent that I, like, had so much trauma. And to this day, I still have, like, certain things and issues with sex because of that ingrained deeply, like, the immigrant experience, the Southern experience. And I remember my first gynecology appointment, I tried to ask Like, I thought this was a safe space. You're my doctor. I'm trying to ask you, like, what is sex? And they stigmatize it even further. They're like, well, if you're doing anything, it's sex, which is not true. I was, like, even more, like, afraid and was like, okay, so I am a bad person for just even asking these questions and trying to gain some bodily autonomy to know what gets me pregnant and what doesn't get me pregnant and what birth controls work and don't work for me and all of these things. It was just a scary time to be in my 20s, in my, you know, between 18 and 22 in Texas, trying to learn about my body and what sex means.
I think people also forget that birth control fails. A lot of birth control has like a 90% success rate, so even if you're the most responsible you can be, you can still get pregnant to no fault of your own.
I want to get my tubes tied because I have a lot of hormone issues, and I also have, I have early onset osteoporosis because of an eating disorder I had, but what I didn't realize until I literally like a few years ago, I finally got a new doctor. I've just seen so many doctors, and one of them finally told me that estrogen is strongly linked to bone density. I had no no one had ever told me that, and I've been dealing with this for like 12 years, and it was really frustrating because I had an IUD. I was on my second IUD at that time, and I was like, so it was blocking estrogen too. Like, it was like the whole, it's just like, it made me so mad because I unknowingly was making myself worse, and no one had told me, and I wasn't able to get my tubes tied, and I still have to take birth control to, like, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's just really annoying that we don't have the information that we need to make decisions that are actually good for us and our bodies. And when we do have them, there's not much of a choice anyway. So it's, I don't know. Let's take our second break.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season remind us to embrace change and fearlessly look toward the future. Like Andrew Jarecki, award-winning filmmaker and creator of Movie Phone.
The studios didn't really control the theaters didn't control the studios. And I thought, well, there's a window in here where I could make things easier for the consumer and also make something that would be very useful for the industry.
Or Kellen Kenny, Chief Marketing and Growth Officer at AT&T, who installed fiber in customers' houses rather than leading from afar.
It is so crucial that you spend time with the customers. That is the best lesson.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back, Becca.
Oh, I was just going to say, I had mentioned this on Daily Zeitgeist earlier this week when we had our trends episode about Roe v. Wade, but I've like never had a positive gynecology experience, mm-hmm. like up until maybe last year in New York City. And that was after my second gynecologist in New York City. My first one was awful, or actually my first two, because I went and got an IUD installed. When the news kind of started bubbling up about Roe v. Wade, I kind of got scared and was like, you know what? Like, it's so clear some of these other birth control options are not working for me. Like, I really am afraid to get an IUD done, but I think it's like my only option. And I don't regret it. Like, it has helped immensely in terms of hormone balances in comparison to the other ones. The other ones really threw my body off, which is frustrating because it's like there's clearly not enough research done to how damaging these you know, hormone imbalances are in our bodies. And I am too afraid to just be birth control free because I don't want to have to, you know, deal with an unwanted pregnancy. And I went in and I had this like Russian doctor who I did not ask for. Like, I had specifically asked for a woman doctor. They were like, oh, she's out today and it's going to take you months to get a new appointment. So like, we're just going to put you with a gynecologist here. I've never had a man doctor before. And we had a language barrier. And then like, I'm trying to ask questions and he's getting frustrated with me because he doesn't, like, he's clearly like trying to say something that I'm not understanding. And then he did it and it was the most painful experience I've ever had in my life. Mm-hmm. They don't numb you. They don't let you, they gave me two ibuprofen. And then I, the influx of hormones made me so emotional. I just cried my entire way home. I was so sick. I almost threw up. I had to take a nap. And then I had to pay $1,000 for that experience.
$1,000?
Yeah, because my insurance only covered the actual IUD itself.
Oh my God.
Did not cover the procedure to get it done.
That is so infuriating.
And I had not hit my deductible yet. So I had to pay $1,000 out of pocket. And I argued with them for months to be like, this doesn't make sense. Like, shouldn't you cover this? And they're like, no, we only cover the IUD. We do not cover the installation.
So you could go pick up an IUD and then put it in there yourself? Like, what is that?
I don't recommend that.
No, of course not. But that's like what they're saying when are like, go on, swoop through, the IUD gets covered.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're encouraging you to hurt yourself.
Just keep it in a little box.
Because it's like, I have to pay for the follow-up appointment too, right? Because they're like, you have to come back in a month to make sure like it didn't move and that like it's all good. So it's like, between the follow-up appointment and the initial appointment, it was like $1,000. And I was like, wow.
Even hearing you, I've had an IUD placed twice now, and I've had one removed. So I had the removal is the most, it's, they just yank it out of you, and I had the same experience of you of like almost throwing up. I really hope by the time you get yours removed there's like more gentleness involved, but my person was not gentle. I don't think she liked me,
as so it goes, you know, as always.
As so it goes. But I just wish we were more educated about hormones, because I grew up knowing, even before I developed like low bone density, that my estrogen was always lower than my testosterone. It's just how I was built or whatever. I also wish I can go without birth control or anything else. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But you're not told how important your hormones are to be balanced for everything, for your health, for your mental state. You know what I mean? All of these are so related. And I feel like we're not given the tools necessary at all. I mean, like, I guess this abortion debate is just so much bigger than just the right to choose. It's also like the right to education and the right to doctors being open and like, or like anything else. It's like they're all so layered, and it really makes me mad because
it's privacy and trust, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like now it's like so much more than just the right to choice, but it's like, I go to a doctor, can I trust this doctor to give me like useful information that is accurate and that is right for me? Because I had a friend who, their sister is pregnant right now, and You know, like, she is in Texas, and she wasn't sure she wanted to keep it. She's married, you know. So it's not like she was coming from an unstable home or environment, whatever. But she's like, I just don't know if it's time. We just came out of a pandemic. Like, I want to live my life. I just, like, feel like I lost 2 years of my life. I just don't know if this is the time for me. And, you know, at that time, the doctor is being kind of weird about it. She's like, okay, I don't even know if I can trust my medical provider because of the laws being 6 weeks and, you know, it's illegal to give an abortion past that. And she had found out, I think, like at week five or something like that. And so it's like she had a week to make a decision before her doctor, like, legally couldn't do anything. And in that, a doctor, you know, can make you wait and be like, no, you should really think about it, so that they can't do the thing that you want them to do. They purposely make it difficult for you so that it's too late. And that is the scarier, sadder part, is that holistically it's like the right to privacy, the right to, you know, proper care, period, more than it is just about my right to not have an abortion.
Yeah. Because if politicians are able to fucking shove their religion down everyone's throat, I'm sure doctors do the same thing to us, even a subconscious degree. You know what I mean? Not all, obviously, hashtag not all doctors, but everyone has their own moral compass. And I think, like it or not, some doctors can't separate that from actually being caretakers or, like, people that can help us. You know what I mean? So,
oh, no, for sure. My first gynecology experience in Texas, my mom was like, you need to go. Like, we didn't have a sex talk. She was basically like, you're going to college. You need to be on birth control. I don't want to talk about it. Like, I'm just taking you to the gynecologist. You're 18 now. Let's go. So we go to her gynecologist, who she's like, that's been fine, whatever. You know, I'm sure she didn't have a lot of thoughts about it because she had already been married for many years and had kids by the time she met this gynecologist. I go in, and the first thing I notice is that there's all these religious figures on the walls. No. This is a Latina Catholic gynecologist. And I'm sitting in, they made me do an interview before I even sat in a medical, like, off, like, room with, like, a chair and, like, the stirrups. Like, I had to sit in her office, and she was like, so why do you want birth control? And I was like, oh, you know, like, for, you know, birth control. And she was like, you're not having hormonal imbalances. Like, you know, you don't need help regulating your period. You don't need help with acne. And at this time, I don't know now, I've been on birth control for so many years, I had super regular cycle. I had no acne. I was, like, very lucky. I had, like, a very blessed, you know, situation going on. And she was like, could not comprehend that, like, I was getting birth control simply to prevent pregnancy. And so she was like, well, that's not okay. Like, you, like, it's not right. You're not married, right? And she's like, are you a virgin? And I was like, I don't know. And that's one of the instances that I was like, I don't understand sex. And embarrassingly. And so she takes
me to the doctor. It's not embarrassing. It's not embarrassing. I know what you mean, though. I know what you mean, though, but it's not your fault, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And so I go to the doctor's office, and they prescribe me this pill or whatever, like the actual, like, medical exam room, and they prescribe me a pill, and I kind of go on my way. But I had noticed, like, nothing really changed. And I was kind of like, I don't really know if this is working. So I go to a different doctor, like, at my campus, and I tell her what I'm on. And she was like a few months later, and she was like, oh, that's not a dosage high enough to actually prevent pregnancy. Like, it's purely for hormone regulation, like, if you were having an irregular cycle. So this doctor sabotaged me. Like, she purposely was like, you are too young to be having sex, and it is a sin, basically, if you do have sex, and your punishment should be getting pregnant because you chose not to have sex, or to have sex premarital.
Wow, name names.
I wish Yelp I could remember her name, but I did report one of the other doctors I saw in Texas, because I went in to get a, like, well woman exam, which includes, like, a breast examination, and, like, you know, I had questions about, like, my different birth control options, because I was on the NuvaRing at the time and I was having a lot of issues with the NuvaRing. It wasn't until the IUD that I learned the extent of my issues, because I had gained 20 pounds, I had these intense migraines, and I asked my doctor, like, multiple doctors I had at this point, if it was because of my NuvaRing, and none of them were honest that, like, my weight gain and my migraines were because of the NuvaRing. And so I was asking questions about the IUD versus the NuvaRing at this appointment, and she was just kind of like, why are you asking questions? Like, aren't I the doctor? You're not the doctor. And I was like, okay, I'm asking for your opinion. Like, I did research because it's my body, but like, I'm here asking you for your opinion because you are the doctor. I'm not trying to be the doctor. And then she wouldn't give me.
Why are they acting like you're the, like you're not the opponent? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And there was a sign on the door that literally said, "Could not re-prescribe your birth control if you did not get your well woman exam." It literally says it on the door. And because I was being, I guess, combative in her eyes, she just wanted to prescribe me, like re-up my prescription, and let me go. And I was like, "Well, aren't you going to do the exam?" And she's just like, "Oh, like you don't have a history of breast cancer in your family, do you?" And I was like, "No." And she's like, "Okay, then you're fine." And I was like, "No, you need to do the exam on me." And she was just like, and I was like, "No, I'm not leaving here until you, like the sign says I can't even get my birth control until you do this exam. I need you to do a medical exam on me because I want to make sure 1 in 5 women get breast cancer, like without any history, any family history. So I'm like, I need you to give me an exam." So I reported her.
Good.
She was at some doctor in Houston. I don't remember her name, but it's just, I've been so traumatized. It's like every doctor I went to in Texas was
totally
a nightmare.
In
Portland, I had one that was okay. When I came to New York, which was the first time I found out I had an STI, I had the doctor's office call me and was like, "Yeah, so you don't have a yeast infection. You actually have chlamydia. Okay, bye." And they hung up. And then I literally like stood and I cried because I like had never, you know, I considered myself pretty safe and I had trusted the person who gave it to me. I was in a relationship with, so they had cheated on me. So it was a little traumatizing information. And I was like, and I tried to call back and they were like not having me ask questions. They were just like, "Yeah, you have chlamydia. Get over it. Like, here's your prescription." Oh, and I was like, cool.
So unsupportive.
That is insane. Wow.
Yeah.
I have a good doctor story. So,
thank God.
let's turn to that to end on. Let's end on a high note, please.
Well, okay. So this also goes with the abortion stuff. So when I was going through this whole process, this was during the pandemic, so you can see anyone in person unless it was really urgent. I had a Zoom meeting with a doctor through Hey Jane, which is one of the like the pill mailing services. And this woman was the kindest person I've ever met because I'm always like scared of doctors, even for just normal physical exams. Like, I just feel uncomfortable in an environment that's that sanitized. And so like go in, ask questions, come out. And yeah, previous bad experiences with doctors. She was just like so reassuring and so kind. And the best part of it was I was like, "I'm really nervous for this. What do you suggest to do to like make it more comfortable?" And she was like, "Yeah, just like smoke some weed if you like weed." I was like, "Wow, I will. You know what?
Like, I actually will."
Yeah. And I was just so mind blown by that because doctors are like, you know, they don't really acknowledge the realities of our lives. Like you said, Becca, like they don't acknowledge the realities that people have sex, or they don't acknowledge the realities that people use like weed to calm down or to, you know, go through stressful experiences. So the fact that she suggested it and there was no stigma whatsoever about the abortion or the weed.
That's good.
It's like you are literally superwoman.
What a safe haven.
Yeah. I will say the one time when I was doing I have my doctor, my primary care, and the first time I ever saw him and he was like, "Do you smoke?" And I was like, "Weed." And he's like, "Yeah, I don't care about that. Do you smoke?" And I was like, "Cigarettes? No." And he's like, "Okay, cool." And the way when I said weed, the way he looked at me like, "Bitch, no one cares about weed."
That doesn't matter.
But I guess I live in California, in Southern California, so that's more normal. But like also he was not an older doctor. He was probably closer to me as a peer than, you know, other doctors I've had. But the way, I just remember the way he was like, anyway, so do you smoke? I was like, what?
I love that.
Like, God, the way he was like, "We all smoke weed, bitch. Okay, do you smoke cigarettes?" I thought that was really funny.
It's just, I want to have more good doctor experiences because I always say I hate doctors and my doctor sister gets mad that I say that. Because not all doctors, right? You had a good doctor, Anna. You know what I mean? So I'm sure they're out there. It's just so unsettling how many of us have had terrible experiences time after time with different people. So,
I think
I
especially women and non-binary folk, anybody who's not.
Oh, exactly. Women of color.
Like,
I
truly am on, like, the fence anytime I enter a new doctor's office, except for maybe like the dentist, like, because they're just like, whatever, your teeth, like, mechanic, you know, like, they don't care about you. But like any actual doctor's office, I'm truly like, okay, I've had this experience, and if you don't do me right, I'm going to walk out of here, I'm going to storm out of here, and I'm going to write a bad review, and you better know that I hate you. And yeah. I finally found a doctor. I will say Mount Sinai, Delancey Street here in New York. All those doctors have been absolutely lovely.
Yay.
I love all of them. But it took me, like, I went through so many doctors in New York already. Like, I tried out many different doctors in New York that I was like, nope, 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 nope. Like, it took me a long time to find the Mount Sinai people, but they've been absolutely lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say one thing. My doctor's office, though, I've had some weird interactions where when COVID first started, I had a really, really bad case of strep throat. And at the time, I didn't know if it was COVID or not. And I was like, this feels like I'm swallowing knives. It doesn't sound like the symptoms, but like, I don't feel good. And my doctor's office, and I had a physical scheduled, and they like were trying to cancel this appointment on me. And I kept being like, dude, like, I need to see someone around over this. Like, and they were like, well, it's like, can you just wait a few days and see if it gets better? And I was like,
I might die.
Like, can you make the appointment? Like, can you, yeah. I need this appointment. Like, you guys are being dicks. And then when I went in, the same doctor was like, bitch, everyone smokes weed. Was like, wait, why have you not come in? You have such a bad case of strep throat. This could lead to heart disease.
Oh my God.
And I was like, talk to your fucking people. Because they've been trying to cancel on me this whole time. And I kept saying, I need to come in. And he was like, you should have come in sooner. And I was like, hello, bitch. Talk to your team. Because they've been like trying to tell me I don't need to come in because it's not like urgent because of COVID. But like, I'm out here literally swallowing knives. Like, literally, it was the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. Like, it was nuts. And then he had to give me antibiotics. And he literally took him 1 second. He put the wood thingy on my tongue and was like, oh, God, bitch, where have you been? You know, like, the way he reacted, like, oh, you should have come in sooner. And I was like,
I've been trying.
But it's like, I tried. It's weird, like, how it goes, like, person by person. Like, you could have a good doctor, but their, like, receptionist or, like, nurse can be a fucking, like, dismissive. And you're like, I don't know. It's sometimes I'm like, I understand having a bad day. I have, like, 99% bad days. But it doesn't stop me from, like, having empathy. Like, right. I can be in a crabby-ass mood, like, fuck you, bitch, don't look at me sort of mood. But if someone comes to me and is like, I really, like, need help with this, I might be irritated, but I in no way will turn them away and or be a fucking dick to them. Like, I don't care how bad a fucking mood you're in. Don't yank a fucking piece of something that's inside my vagina out of me. I don't give a shit what kind of mood you're in. You need to, if you want to be in this profession, I'm sorry to say it, you need to have some fucking care. And, like, it makes me truly nutty when people will be like, well, I was having a bad day. It's like, we're all fucking having bad days. But it doesn't stop me from taking a moment to be like, oh, like, I don't know anyone's experiences. I don't know where this person is coming from. Me being a dick to them because, like, I stubbed my toe or something 20 minutes ago and it's, like, ruined my day is not an excuse anymore, like, in my mind. Like, I think we need to have more empathy and care towards each other. And I think that really and people be like, that's toxic. I shouldn't have to act any sort of way I don't want to act. Like, no, bitch. I don't care if that's toxic. You need to give people respect. And maybe that's because I'm a child of immigrants and I had my ass, face, everything smacked around until I learned the concept of respect. But the one time my mom slapped the shit out of me, guess what? She never slapped me again because it fucking made sense to me that I had to have respect. Like, it's, I'm sorry to bring into, like, immigrant parents and they're slapping you. But, like, it's true. It's like there's this level of respect that people just don't have. And I think it is taught. But, like, I will never make anyone feel any sort of way because I'm having a bad day. Does that make sense? Like, it's just it's very irritating to me when people are like, they're having a bad day, so that's why they can be a piece of shit to you. And it's like, no, that doesn't work for me because there's no reason for that.
Yeah, no, I mean, anyone that thinks empathy can ever be toxic needs to go. But I think empathy is good to, like, to bring it back to abortion. I know we kind of veered off into, like, doctor birth control territory. But
health.
Yeah, that's what's lacking. It's empathy for other people. Like, there's so many things that's wrong with not allowing women to have control over their own body, or anyone with a uterus to have any control over their own bodies.
Yeah. It sucks.
But it's like, yeah, like it's, you're not seeing those people as human beings that have a life outside of your judgment, you know? So look again into the notes of this episode. We'll put a bunch of resources in there, either like in a Google Doc or just some links.
I think I'll just link the Google Doc so you guys can just go look through everything that we've compiled. And look, it's not always the greatest formatting, but you know what? Deal with it.
It's there, but it's there. And Becca and Trisha, really appreciate you guys researching and jumping on this roundtable. This was good. I think we should do more of these. This was fun.
Yeah,
I really liked it. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks both of you for being so open, too.
Thanks for doing kind of majority of the work.
Yeah, that too. But yeah, do you want to plug your socials before we wrap out of here? You don't have to.
Yeah, sure. You can find me at Bex Ramos, BeccsRamos, on all platforms.
You don't have to.
You're just famously not on the internet.
No, I don't have any social media.
Famously. Right. Okay, you still don't.
Famously. However, I will plug that I'm actually doing a project on abortion with a friend of mine who I created a podcast with, Benjamin, and it's going to be like a short documentary series. So maybe you guys can like link to it in the future when it's out. So check that out when it's available.
Stay tuned for that.
Stay tuned.
And I'm Shireen. You know who I am on the internet by now, Anna.
Yes, I'm at Anna Hosting on Twitter. And now, guys, huge announcement. I have my first official public Instagram page. What? That's crazy. I know. You're telling me. Look at me going public. It's because so many of you were in my DMs trying to take oaths so you could follow me. I was like, this is actually crazy. I actually can't sustain this many people. I want to get rid of people on my private Instagram, including family and friends. So I'm trying to clean house on that private Instagram. So if you know what's right for you, go to my public Instagram at Selling Hosnier. It's S-E-L-L-I-N-G. Yes, I'm selling my soul. Hosnier. H-O-S-S-N-I-E-H. Follow me at Selling Hosnier. Oh my God. Guys, it's going to be a wild ride on there. Let me tell you, I'm already planning some crazy stuff for it. I'm going to do a lot of influencing. A lot of influencing. It's true. I'm finding the most absurd things that I enjoy in life, and I'm going to put them on this Instagram and influence with them. Let me tell you, I already have some truly absurd things coming in the pipeline. That's right. I have a whole team. Just joking. I don't. It's just me making notes on my phone of things I enjoy that I think are really funny to try and influence about. So get ready, you guys, at Selling Hosnier. Hope to see you there. Give me a little shout. Tell your friends.
Yeah, this is a big turn for Anna.
Oh, of course. Real quick, can I also say, get at me on TikTok at Anna Hosnier. Guys,
oh my God, this is getting too much.
On the socials. Okay, that's it. Sorry, promote EA.
It's okay. It's okay. I think at this point, everyone knows the socials of the show. Ethnically Amb on Twitter, Ethnically Amb Big, AMBIG on Instagram, Shiro Hero, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, blah, blah. That's it. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Woo.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts,
the medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stages Podcast.
Binge close to 100 episodes. Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with this season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast.
Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.